Just and look wherever you want.
Small screen of me on the left.
Yeah, I mean, you could look at that. Look at me. Like, maybe look at me.
Yeah.
Look at me, and that'll help.
Help that actually works.
Yeah, it'll help you too. It'll help us communicate better. I'm finding I like it with the video because people can see me going, like I want to ask a question. Yeah. So I don't have to interrupt them as much. I go, and then they go, oh, what? It's funny. So that's helpful. Okay, well, we're now streaming audio and video. So don't say poop. Well, you can, but, you know, you'll probably get thrown off of Facebook community standards, you know. I'm going to pull up your website here. U.S. Coin Capital. It's Capitol, right? No, Capital. Capitol. Capital.
Capitol. Like the building.
Oh, like the building. Yeah.
Capital.
Yeah, I like it.
U.S. Coin Capital.
U.S. Coin Capital. I like it a lot. Site looks great.
Yeah, I had that conversation with our web designer, and we went back and forth because I had said, you know, aren't people going to get confused? And then she's like, well, she thought that it was a better marketing angle to go with the Capital because it afforded us an opportunity to play with, you know, logos and things.
Sure. No, yeah, it looks great. It looks great.
I yielded to her. She's the expert.
That's right.
You know, fine, whatever.
Plus, she's a woman, and women probably know more than us guys. What can I tell you? Okay, so.
She's pretty smart.
Okay, let's see here. We got everything going. Why don't we make sure we're streaming, we're streaming, we're streaming, we're streaming, we're streaming. And I'll start off with a little shot of moi. And here we go.
Nothing is more expensive than bad information. Know the source. OneRadioNetwork.com.
Okay, good morning. Got kind of a geeky money kind of a morning. Wednesdays are generally like that. First guest will be Fred Dashefsky. Fred is the a former partner of Andrew Goss, who left us suddenly about 18 months ago or so. And Fred is now the head man at USCoinCapital.com. Numismatic coins, and we talk about the real world of money, which is the original show continuing with Thread that we started in 2000. Well, gosh, I mean, it was the late 90s in KLBJ radio in Austin. And the next hour, a really fascinating kind of fellow. We're going to stay in the money, geopolitical craziness stuff, Mishtalk. He has a website called thestreet.com, and his name is Michael Mish something. And he's a really interesting guy. I think you're going to like Mish. He calls himself Mish, Michael Shedlock. And so we'll talk about all kinds of stuff, and we'll stay in the genre of money this morning. If you care to join us, here's how you do it. Patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com, or if you're adventurous, and I know it doesn't use your thumbs, but try it, 888-663-6386, 888-663-6386. 86, and in his palatial studios there in Hilton Head, South Carolina, Fred Dashefsky. Hi, Fred.
Good morning, Patrick.
I like your palatial studios there. It's very, very good. I like it.
Thank you.
So how's
just my desk?
Yeah, how's it going with U.S. Coin Capital? So this is a real new kind of adventure since Andy's passing, and you guys regrouped and redid it all. You having fun and building your biz?
We are. You know, it was a very strange time to begin a new business just before a COVID crisis broke out. So that turned out to be rather unusual, and a lot of unexpected things have certainly happened since we started. It has been really quite an adventure. You know, we've worked really hard. I'm very proud of the staff. They've done a great job. We've incorporated a lot of new technology things that we've wanted to do for many years. We've tried to sort of get into the 21st century stuff that's kind of hard to avoid.
Yeah.
You know, technology will continue to move along, as you and I were just saying, whether we like it or not.
Here we are.
But it has been an interesting market environment. And then I don't think anybody in January of this year would have thought that, you know, the COVID crisis would have been the economic event of 2020. I think everybody was focused at the beginning of the year. Do you remember the China trade wars?
Oh, yeah.
You know, that was the main problem that we were facing coming into the beginning of this year. And it seemed like that was going to be the dominant economic problem. And yet we have been so overtaken by COVID and what it's forced the Federal Reserve to do and how it's affected the economy, and millions of Americans have been affected by it in multiple different ways.
Huge. Yeah,
it's been unusual, but strange, but strange. Entertaining for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, as you say, I think we look back to January, February, Fred, and I don't think we could ever envision the amount of bankruptcies and the retail stores closing and, still sheltering and people doing their restaurants outside. I don't know what they're going to do when it gets cold. It's just, do we have any idea? By the way, I hear something in the background, some kind of voice talking. You got something?
Probably just the... How's that?
There you go. Yeah. Okay.
CNBC was trying to, get on in the show.
Yeah, they were kind of trying to get in. So do you have a really good sense of how, you use your word, Fred, devastating this whole economic thing in the last, with COVID? I mean, how troubling this is for our economy. Can you give us your perspective on it?
Sure. The reason I find it really troubling is because of what the Federal Reserve has chosen to do in order to solve the problem as they see it. So they learned many lessons from previous economic problems. The biggest one, of course, that we've ever faced was 2008. And in that lesson, the biggest issue that they ran into was a lack of liquidity. And their biggest concern coming into COVID was with this massive economic slowdown, that the economy would come to a grinding halt. And I have pointed out for quite a while that I was very concerned that the Federal Reserve had been utilizing, its magic bag of tricks before COVID coming into this. When I was a kid, there was this cartoon. It was called Felix the Cat. He was the wonderful, wonderful cat. And he had his little magic bag of tricks. And every time he had a problem, he could reach into this little magic bag, which was the size of a doctor bag, and pull out enormous things or whatever he needed, and always could solve his problem by yanking something out of his magic bag of tricks. Well, the Federal Reserve has a fairly limited bag of tricks, and it had already been utilizing about everything in it to stave off problems coming into the economy before COVID.
Before COVID.
We'd had a massive...
Before COVID.
If you remember the massive slowdown in the economy coming into the Trump administration, we were months away, if not weeks away, from the U.S. going into a full recession. And the Federal Reserve attempted to stimulate the economy by both many mechanisms of trying to lower interest rates. So the first one was direct, where they literally just lowered the discount rate and the Fed funds rate. So that means that what the banks pay to borrow money from the Fed and what the banks pay each other for short-term loans were lowered to the floor, almost to zero. And this was to help stimulate economic activity. So they'd already pulled that trigger before COVID ever became a problem. Now COVID kicks in and we begin to see this significant slowdown in the economy that further drives the problem and exacerbates the need to drive somehow something that will move the economy forward. And without the magic bag of tricks option of lowering interest rates, because they were already down to effectively zero, the Fed had to come up with more creative methods of trying to do the same thing through the economy. So this is where we saw things like repeating of quantitative easing, the additional stimulus packages, on top of which the government, and we can say whether it was right or wrong, decided to try to help the general public by authoring a bill that said we're going to send money directly to people across the United States. And of course, that comes at a cost because we don't have a pool of money from which to draw. So we know that you have to create that kind of capital.
And then borrow it.
So the debt load started to really, really grow.
So let's recap. Let's recap, Fred. So the idea that after the Fed lowers interest rates to, as you say, near zero, there's nothing else they can do except create money and lend it to the Treasury, correct?
Somehow or another. How else do you put money into the economy?
That's how you do.
You don't make it affordable.
Yeah.
So the Fed said, okay, well, we can do a few things. We can purchase treasuries and securities directly from the United States Treasury.
Right.
And that is the typical method by which the Fed, from the day of its charter in 1913, has afforded the opportunity to stimulate economic growth. The problem the Fed found was that wasn't sufficient in this environment. Buying treasuries wasn't enough. So they increased the amount that they would buy.
Mm-hmm.
And they started to buy a lot of the long-term notes in order to keep the interest rate markets low, to, again, help more than merely lowering the Fed funds rate and the Fed discount rate. They secondarily also tried to buy any of the yields on the bonds and issues of the Treasury that would pay any higher rate, so that all that was prevailing were the lowest rate environment issues of debt.
Let me stop you there. Let me stop you there so we understand. So when the Fed goes out and buys longer term treasuries, which offer a higher yield because they're longer.
Pay more.
Right. So when they take those off the table, you say that helps keep everything. I don't understand how that helps when they keep those off the table and out of the market.
Sure. Well, it helps keep interest rates low because a lot of the interest rates around the world are set by whatever the current rate of payment on government-issued notes would be.
10-year?
So a lot of the math that's used to decide, you know, how much the borrowing costs of money would be are based upon the costs of and the return in yields on these notes that are available.
Okay.
So if the short-term rates are all that are out there and they're paying a lower rate, then effectively the environment looks as if we have a lower rate economy.
I see.
And that helps perpetrate lower rates for everything across the board. It's just a benchmark by which a lot of things are drawn from. So there's an advantage from the Federal Reserve actions if they will take off the table any high yielding notes.
Interesting.
And only leave available the lower stuff.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay,
now,
so they did that. What else then did they do? Now, I mean, what else?
Okay. So after that, which they refer to as quantitative easing, that wasn't effective enough. So the Fed began to get kind of desperate. And again, as I refer to my magic bag of tricks, they were running out of tricks. So they went to Congress and said, we are going to issue a state of emergency. We're going to kick in Rule 13.3 on the Fed charter.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that means that the Federal Reserve now is declaring a state of emergency, which opens up for the Federal Reserve a number of new options of things that it can purchase besides the normal treasuries that it would buy from the U.S. government. And that includes things like corporate debt, ETFs, going directly to companies and providing them with direct liquidity.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of the feds making the liquidity available to the bank so that the bank would loan the money to the corporate entity, the Fed directly went to the corporate entity and handed them cash.
Wow.
It also started buying municipal bonds. It started buying all sorts of instruments that traditionally are deemed a little too risky for the Federal Reserve to buy. And the Treasury actually put up trillions in order to make sure that if any of these things went bad, that they would be backstopped, which in the end really translates to you and I as taxpayers.
Exactly. This 13.3, Fred Dyshevsky, was this done by the Fed Board? The Fed Board or the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, which are separate?
Well, it's the Federal Reserve Board goes to Congress.
Okay.
And it says to Congress, we need to institute this rule.
13.3.
Without exception, the Federal Reserve does need tacit authority from Congress for just about everything it does. So the problem is that, they demonstrated in 2008 that the Federal Reserve definitely has the ability to strong arm Congress. You know, they can threaten, suggest that if Congress doesn't do A, B, and C, results would be so dramatic that it would cause so much trouble and economic problem that it would be foolish not to do it.
Yes, sir.
And in my opinion, most of the congressmen I just don't think they have a grasp on it enough to be able to argue with the Fed to say, you know, I don't think that's reasonable and I don't agree. So they just accept those notions.
They just do it.
That the Fed knows what it's doing. And if the Fed says, hey, you know, we're desperate, we need to institute this rule and we need to start doing things that you may find objectionable, I don't think anybody in Congress is really going to stand up and argue that they don't believe that that makes sense. There have been a handful here and there, but, you know, traditionally that's never been an issue. So the Fed strong arms Congress into allowing it to pursue much more risky ventures in order to stimulate the economy. And the goal of all of this nonsense, all of these manipulations, is to provide liquidity, make sure money is in the economy so that we don't have a crisis from a financial standpoint due to a lack of liquidity.
I'm looking here at the Fed's balance sheet, and it looks like, if I'm reading this correctly, within the last month or so, is it possible that they stacked on 2 trillion treasuries? I mean, because...
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, they're borrowing incredible amounts of money.
That's
the deficits
a lot of
are going to soar about $3 trillion just because of the COVID crisis. Stimulus, $3 trillion.
So far.
And I know that we've talked about it. Yeah, that's just so far. I remember the first time you and I discussed this, I think the Fed's balance sheet at the time was starting at about the $4 trillion level.
Right.
And I had guesstimated that by the time this was all done, and this may be maybe next year by the time we're actually finished with this, you know, some thought COVID might end by now. We thought at the beginning of the year it was possible that it would be over by the midsummer or the end of summer or coming into fall. Apparently that's not going to be the case, and this may go on through 2021. So the Fed has continued to pile on to its balance sheet, and it has jumped from $4 trillion to over $8 trillion, and close to $8 trillion now. And the estimates from even conservative investment bankers are that we're going to be pushing $9 trillion. I think it'll be 10 by the time we're done. And that's something that, from a time standpoint, to unwind $10 trillion worth of debt that the Fed has accumulated and to balance out their balance sheet will probably take 15 to 20 years.
And you've explained to us before, Fred, that it's important that they do at some point balance it out and not keep all this stuff on the balance sheet, even though it's all been made up, you know, with monopoly money. And because they lose credibility around the world, right? We just pile it on. It's like, is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, if they're constantly buying every debt instrument off the street,
people say,
everybody
what's
begins
up?
To recognize that everything that goes bad, the Fed buys, it puts it on its balance sheet, mm-hmm. but it never can release that back and settle that back into the economy. First of all, it becomes pretty unwieldy, even for the Federal Reserve. There is a limit to the amount of things that it can manage on its balance sheet. And it is a force of confidence that really is critical, that the general world economic environment has to be stable. People have to believe that the central banks are capable of managing crises and managing problems. If they see them piling on debt to an unsustainable level, and I say unsustainable as a reference to the conversation that the chairman of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell, said himself in open testimony that he believed that the level of debt that we were beginning to build was, in his words, unsustainable.
He said that.
And I find that troubling.
Yeah.
I think the Fed has run out of mechanisms to deal with this. I think their Felix the Cat magic bag of tricks has been turned over and shaken, and there's nothing left. There are very limited options.
And Andy used to call it what, pushing on a string? It's the idea. What is, I always like that visual, you know, that they just keep pushing out,
sure.
pushing out, but nothing's really, really happening. I guess a lot has to do with velocity too. Richard Mayberry was on last week or a few weeks ago, and we look at the MZM. People aren't spending money really, right? I think it's $20 trillion in MZM right now, which is, you know, it's a lot of money under the mattress.
Yeah. Well, talk about money under the mattress. Okay, so this has become such a big problem that there was a shortage. I say this in air quotes, a shortage
Thanks.
Of coins, the modern coins, not silver coins or gold coins like I deal with that are actually rare because they can't make any more of them. I'm talking about the change you have in your pocket suddenly becoming unavailable because everybody had stopped spending it. Well, people were asking me about this for weeks. Is there a coin shortage? And I said, no, it's a velocity problem. It's not that there's a lack of this stuff. It's just that no one's spending it because there's a concern that handling physical money might be a method of transferring the disease. It reminded me of in the early 20th century, we changed designs on a couple of the gold coins. We made a 2.5 Indian head and a $5 Indian head gold piece after having had the Liberty design from the 1860s. And this new Indian head design was what they called incused. So in other words, if you ever look at a coin, you'll notice the details of the coin are raised from the surface.
Yeah.
But on the 2.5 and 5 Indian, they punched it into the field. So the details are actually lower than the surface of the coin. Hmm. And at the beginning of the 20th century, Legionnaire's disease was the biggest medical crisis of the era. And people became terrified that the crevices of the coins were a method of transferring Legionnaire's disease. So the handling of Indian head gold pieces diminished while this theory circulated. I find it funny that we're kind of repeating the history again with these modern coins that people are worried that they might be touching a quarter that somebody else touched that had the disease, so they don't want to handle the change.
But this old coin shortage thing, I guess it could be all sorts of mechanism, Fred Dyshevsky, behind it, with just the money guys eventually want to get all of the currency out anyway, like to all digital someday anyway. Would this be part of that?
Well, I don't really see that as part of it per se. I do believe that that is true, though, that there is a strong push to move toward a non-cash system for a number of reasons. You know, I've always suggested that as antiquated as it may seem, the benefit of still printing paper money is that you and I can still look at numbers and count. You know, we can look at reference numbers like the H41. We can go and say, how much money is there out there? How much expansion of the supply of capital has happened? We can count the number of dollars. If we ever move to a completely digital system, whatever that might be, well, then we lose that ability to follow the amount of money in the system by any real means. So if you can go onto a computer or keyboard and press buttons and expand the supply of money, how do I, as a person in America, keep track of how many of these new digital dollars really have been created? And the reason I would want to do that is because my life, your life, is affected by the amount of dollars in the system. Because as they continue to print money, especially in the modern era where it's all unbacked paper, then they're diluting the value of the currency I currently hold. So for me, the knowledge of how much money exists is pretty essential to figuring out the future value of money I'm earning today. And if I lose that ability, if we don't have that accounting anymore to say, I can look at how many dollars have been printed because now it's all digital, that's problematic for me more than anything else. I worry about the loss of privacy. I worry about a number of other things that are involved in a cashless system. But we've moved closer and closer to that through my lifetime. I think probably prior to COVID, if you'd asked a restaurant, you know, what percentage of business do you do on, let's say, credit cards and debit cards versus cash, I'd imagine it was pretty heavily weighted on the credit card side, probably 80-90%, I guessed.
Sure.
Now, you know, again, everything has changed. But
yeah.
So the advent of moving to a more and more cashless system is something we've been evolving to. And again, now the technology is making it more palatable because the convenience. It's the convenience.
Yeah. And just, I guess, philosophically, culturally, if there's not dollars being transferred after a while, you just kind of, it's like out of sight, out of mind, right? And I think it'd be easier, as you're saying, to just print a whole lot more. I mean, just create a lot more because there's not even any paper to even say how many dollars, you know, even look at the dollars.
Sure.
How do you know? So Fred Dyshevsky is here. If you'd like to be on the show, US Coin Capital is sponsoring the show, and they do that once a month on the first Monday. Give yourself a little plug here. So do you have any coins you can show us? You should do a show and tell sometime. So, what's going on now? Because, and we're going to get into it after this break and even have a little bit of tape from a couple of days ago with Peter Schiff and Jim Rickards on gold. And it's really been bombing the last, what, Fred, the week? We're at $2,045, right? Oh, isn't that cool?
It's not coming out very well, is it?
That's right. It shines. But that's how they come, the numismatic coins in these little plastic cases, right? Yeah. So yes. Gold has really been on a tear. And what does that do for your business? Do more people call when they see the price going up rather than buy it when the price is going down? They want to buy numismatic coins when the price is going up?
Human psychology is really interesting. When we talk to people and the markets are calm and quiet, when silver was low and gold was stagnant, sitting in a relatively, modest range, it was a little bit more difficult to get people to necessarily see the advantages. So we've always talked about it, and I really think this is important, that most of the people that we deal with understand this. And for those that are relatively new, it's very important that people recognize that it is a long-term vehicle that will benefit people, not something that I think speculators coming into the market to make a quick killing should venture into.
Right.
So the runs that we've had in gold and silver in the last 4 or 5 months, honestly, are unprecedented. I've been doing this for 36 years.
Wow.
I have seen a couple of runs in gold and silver. And historically, when we get these kinds of rapid movements, there also tend to be a few of these pullbacks. So again, I referenced this earlier that, gold used to run between 450 and 550 an ounce, and it would push almost 600 and then pull back into the mid 500s. And then people who bought at 610 would look and say, oh, I just bought at 610 and now it's back to 530. Well, then it would ratchet up to 550 and 570 and then cross into the 670 and 680 and 700. And then the 400s would be gone. And then we'd move up to 800, 900, and we'd have the same kind of movement between a couple of ranges. And then we crossed into the $1,000 mark and so on. So now we've crossed through 1900 into where we are today at $2,047 gold. And just as a reference, I made a point of this, that on July 4th of this year, gold had hit $1,776.
Really?
I thought that was kind of cool that we had 1776 gold on July 4th.
My goodness. And that's just a couple months ago? Wow.
So July 4th to where we are now a month later, we're now at 2,000 and change. So with this kind of rapid growth, and silver, by the way, is now $27 an ounce. So it has started at about $14 a year ago. I mean, we're seeing massive increases. Now, I think this is happening for several reasons. One, because we have this massive amount of money that the Federal Reserve has been printing. And people are recognizing that it's hard to ignore trillions. Billions, we'll sleep through that. Tens of billions. Yeah, 100 billion will raise some eyebrows. But when we start throwing trillions on a monthly basis, for example, the government in the month of June, the last month we have full records for, they spent as much money as they did the entire year of 2019 in 1 month. Deficit spending has exploded. And the problem is, I see no end in sight, because the government has decided that it is going to, I say the Federal Reserve, not the government, the Federal Reserve has decided that it is not going to be concerned at all about the massive amount of damage to the dollar in the future for all the money being printed now, because all they're worried about in the current environment is to get the money into the economy.
And if President Trump does have influence, which he probably does, he's out there banging away at that as well, right? He wants them to keep it moving. Keep it moving. You got to
keep it moving. And, Chairman Powell has been very strange about this, but he clearly has said, A, we don't have a mechanism to unwind what we're doing. Mm-hmm. B, we have no plan to unwind what we're doing. We don't even know if it can be done. However,
we're
going to forgo any concern about that for now, because right now all we want to do is print the money we need to make sure the economy is stimulated.
Yes.
So on the back of the trillions, the gold prices are climbing because the dollar, which is used to denominate gold, has gotten weaker.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
we were talking this morning, you and I, before the show, about right. this dollar index.
Mm-hmm.
There are some critical levels that we're hitting. And as we get lower and lower on that dollar index, the gold and silver prices go up. Secondly, we have a negative real interest rate environment for the first time in probably U.S. history.
Okay, explain to us what that means.
Since World War II.
Talk to us like we're a young child okay. or a golden retriever so we understand. Negative interest rate environment, right?
Woof.
Negative interest rate environment, because, you know, it's important to know that.
Yeah, so it is important because it's part of what's driving the movement of money. And there is a massive amount of money moving around. So a lot of money is exiting the stock market and buying bonds. And the reason they're doing this is because they see safety mm-hmm. in the bond market. Even though the yields are negligible, it seems to be that the guess is I'd rather lock in 0.2% than risk what might happen in a year in the stock market.
Right.
Because it's so volatile that the potential loss there is so potentially great, I'd rather lock up a minimal yield. But the problem is the current rate of inflation, even based upon the government numbers, which you and I mean, you've talked to Andy for 20 years, you know those numbers are complete crap.
Yeah, they are.
I mean, they're just as cooked as books could be. But even accepting the government statistical numbers of roughly 2.5 to 3% inflation, if you have a 0.2% yielding bond,
right,
and an environment where inflation is 3% annually, you've lost 2.8% for that year in your money.
When you loan money to the government, you know, in a bond. Wow. No.
Well, let's say you buy a bond,
right,
you yourself, you get paid 0.2% yield.
Interest.
But in that same year that you hold it, you've lost 3% to inflation.
Mm-hmm.
The actual real result then is you've lost 2.8% of your money.
If the 3%
so
is real.
Really have,
if the 3% is real, and we know it's higher than that.
Even presuming 3%.
Yeah.
So even accepting their number as a point, what we've created is a negative yielding interest rate environment.
Hmm.
So that makes it a real fundamental problem. And what that causes is it causes a motion of money to look for other places to go. And one of the safe haven options are the gold and silver markets.
Ah. Hmm. So that's
so
adding
part
to
of
this
what's
move.
Driving,
yeah, that's adding to this move as well.
Adding to the move.
Very interesting. Yeah.
It's almost like a perfect storm.
Hmm.
So you have, you know, all these things aligned together.
Mm-hmm.
We have a massive amount of government debt coming into COVID.
Mm-hmm.
We had an expansion of the level of debt coming into COVID. We had stimulus from the federal government, from the Trump administration to get out of the recession that we were heading toward at the beginning of his administration. On top of that, now you have all of the stimulus for COVID, then the slowdown in the economy, then the lowering of the funds rates by the Fed, then the additional printing of money by the Fed, then the stimulus by the Fed in all these other areas that it never previously touched. And then on top of that, a negative yielding interest rate environment. You've got a lot of reasons why people are beginning to say, we need to look at an alternative as opposed to what we would maybe normally do in an environment that was a little bit more stable.
But again, you folks,
volatility in the stock market.
Yes. You folks at U.S. Coin Capital, Mandy, you've always been like this as long as I've known you, to be careful with people not to buy numismatic coins if they think gold is going to go up in the next 6 months and they want to sell it. That's not the way to do it, right? Because you're going to lose money because of the spread. Maybe.
You could. You know,
you could.
We certainly have had a very weird market since March. Some of the things that we work with our customers,
mm-hmm.
They're already profitable. And again, this is not typical. The long-term process is really what makes this work. With that mentality, people will do very well. I try to steer people away from the market if they're what I call speculators.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of people who have come to me in the past few months with a lot of money. And they've suggested that they want to come into the market, think that the prices are going to go up really quickly. They're going to make a quick killing, pull out and dump it and run.
Right.
It could work, but as a plan, I don't believe that that's the way people should look at this. I believe that we need to be a little bit more long-term minded and just simply recognize that everything going on today requires people to pay attention to the reality that it seems almost unlikely that the U.S. dollar would not get weaker in the next several years. I can't envision how it wouldn't continually get weaker if we stay on the path we're on now. Even if we stop what we're doing today, we'll be paying for what's already been done for a very long time to come.
Yeah.
And there's no end in sight, so it's not stopping. So I think the proper method is to be thinking 5 years from now, 10 years from now, how a dollar will appear in the real world. And that's the reason to own gold and silver. Numismatic coins or gold and silver of any form is protection and a way of diversifying one's wealth into something physical that you own that's actually tangible, something not tied to the world of paper.
And you're protecting yourself from what you would be able to buy, Fred, 5 years from now or 10 years from now, if the whole system keeps doing what they're doing, you know, printing, borrowing, unless they wake up and see the light and get religion and change, which that's pretty doubtful, you know, right? It's like going to Vegas for that one, right? So that's what you're really protecting against is how much your dollar is going to buy 10 years from now when you go to have
even 5 years.
Five years now, yeah.
I just find for a lot of people that they're planning their future and, you know, they work diligently. They try to squirrel away a couple of bucks and they invest their money with the hope that they'll be able to buy more goods and services in the future. That's the reason people invest in the first place. The problem that a lot of people never factor in is if you're in the traditional equities, which are the stocks and the bonds, what we don't count on is the fact that the underlying value of those is really based in the end on the value of that strength of the U.S. dollar. And if that is being changed under the, you know, underneath the surface, then they're affected by that across the board. And I've always found having a little bit of one's wealth in gold and silver coins gave people a counterbalance to this weaker dollar that would happen over time. What a lot of people didn't anticipate was how rapidly the dollar would start to lose value, because I don't think anybody really expected the actions the Fed has currently taken to be what would be the case coming into 2020. I don't think anybody would have guessed that we would have added trillions and trillions of dollars worth of debt in such a short period of time. These numbers are really unprecedented. It's the largest influx of money into an economy in world history. It's never been done before. And I think this is going to be a significant period of time we'll look back on, and we'll be able to see 5 years from now, we'll be able to look back at a broadcast like this and say, sure, it was pretty obvious the dollar was going to get weaker. They printed trillions of dollars. How could it not?
How could it not? Fred Dashefsky with The Real World of Money on the first Wednesday of every month. His company is U.S. Coin Capital. You can see the website, uscoincapital.com. The 800 number is there, 878-2646. And you can call Fred. You're there all the time, right? Folks want to talk to you. And you have the time to actually talk to people and help them to understand where they are, what their goals are, right? You do take that time.
We do. We try to do a lot of consultations so that people can understand the nature of what makes sense for them, you know, why this would be important to work with them on their goals. And, you know, we've tried to build a process for everybody from the novice straight up. And there are a lot of interesting new people coming to the industry. You know, again, you and Andy and I have been talking about this stuff for 20 plus years. You know, Andy and I were in this business for a very long time before his passing. I have now been doing this. We're coming into 37 years. And I would say that after a while, you know, after a couple of decades, what we're finding is there's like a whole new generation of people, and I don't mean that in terms of their age, but it's like a whole new wave are coming to understand this now for the first time.
Yeah.
And in some cases, it's almost they're being forced to look at it, and because of the prices of gold and silver moving, as you pointed out earlier, what happens when that goes on? Well, sure, we get a lot more people responding, a lot more people that we talked to earlier now say, yeah, I guess I could have done that when it was lower in price, and now I see it going up every day, and I'm jumping in. Okay, that's fine.
Do you watch any of the regular old media just to see what's going on, like CNBC and these places? Do you spend
sure.
any? Are they talking about the gold price in the last couple of weeks?
I'll tell you what, they're talking about it, and what's interesting to me is a lot of these equity traders. Somebody posed a question to the equity traders, you know, when they have those multi-screens, you know, when they have 20 people on the screen, you know what I'm talking about, right? So they posed the question. They said, given the current state of the economy right now, 2020, would you rather be in gold or equities? And most of them actually had gold.
Really?
I was stunned by that. They're like, they just said, well, look, you know, if we had to say, we had to pick one or the other, you could only be in one or the other, and it had to be all, you know, everything you did, where would you rather be? They felt better about owning gold right now than they do about equities, based upon two things. Number one, the volatility in the stock market, which, as you probably have seen over the past few years, the volatility has increased dramatically. There used to be somewhat of a tight range that the market would fluctuate. You know, it would move a little bit. Now, they've created this thing on Wall Street. It's called the Volatility Index, the VIX.
VIX, yeah.
And it registers the relative level of movement in a range that the market is going through. So if the market is very tight and, you know, barely moving up and down from day to day, it moves a little bit here and there, that VIX number, Volatility Index, will be very low, like a 6 or a 7 on this scale.
Yeah.
As progressively more volatile, it begins to ratchet up. Well, we've crossed 12, 15. We're in the mid-20s now as a regular standard for the Volatility Index, because when the market moves these days, you know, the Dow doesn't drop 10 or 50 or 100 points. It drops 300 or 500, or it goes up 300 or 500. Mm-hmm. Day after day, we get volatile swings now that, you know, again, if you're on the right side of that, you could be making quite a bit of money, but it creates a lot of upset for the average person, you know, when the news comes out of the day. And that's just what it is. It's like the restaurant has their soup of the day. It's French onion soup. Well, we have our news of the day. And whatever it is, if it happens to be good for the dollar, the market rockets. And if it's bad for the dollar, the market drops. And it's almost instantaneous. It never used to be that tight. But this volatility is an indicator of a lack of support for the current value. People are uncertain how they feel about the market at these levels, and they're willing to run away at a moment's notice. Yeah. That could be dangerous for investors.
And if you're bored, you can look at the VIX, and you don't want to go to Vegas because you have to wear a mask. You can actually go short or go long the VIX and make or lose money. So, you know, there's always something fun to do, you know, with your money. Patrick Timpone, along with Fred Jaszewski. We're gonna do a little clip here, Fred, from Jim Rickards, who's a pretty famous guy. He's a gold bug. And also then he's going to morph into Peter Schiff. They're on a big TV show, network show. And Jim Rickards comes coming on and then talks about what Jim Rogers, the legendary Jim Rogers, told him about the price of gold. And so let's just click in and listen.
He said, gold's going to the moon, but nothing goes to the moon without a 50% correction along the way. And if you look at the high in 2011, $1,900, you know, approximately, and where was the bottom of the bear market? It was $1,050 on December 16, 2015. Nobody knew it was the bottom at the time. But if you look at that drop down and you use $250 as your base, because, you know, you need a base. So you had basically the run from 250 to 1900 was $1,750. Go down 50% from there, it's $825. $1,900 minus $825 is $1,075, and the bottom was $1,050. So Jim totally stuck the landing, like at $1,050, like, okay, there's your 50% retracement. Now that's the bottom. Now it's going up, and the sky's the limit.
Peter, do you agree? Can we be seeing a 50% retracement before prices rally more?
A 50% retracement of what? Of the, what move are you talking to? I think we've already seen the big retracement of that original bull market that Jim talked about, where gold went from under 300 to just over 1900. I think we've now formed a very solid base, really between about 1200 and 1500, which is where gold was trading for most of those years since it peaked. And now I think we've broken out of that range. I think we've taken out the highs. I think it's another leg of the bull market. I don't think there's going to be any significant pullbacks from here. I mean, there'll be pullbacks, but I don't think they're going to be very significant. I think if you're waiting for a big drop to buy gold, you're going to wait a long time. And when you finally get it, I think it's going to drop from a much higher price than it is if you just bought it right now.
Okay, well, there's Peter Schiff, and he's been a gold bug forever. He's also been a real always trash talk on the dollar, which he has for 25 years, as long as I've ever seen Peter Schiff, right? So, you know, someday he's going to be right, I guess, because he's always talked about it, you know, really crashing. And but
well, of all the people in our industry, there is I would say a range. You know, there are those that have been expounding on the idea that we're going to see $5,000 gold in right. the next year, and you know, those that are really purporting the massive deflation of the dollar and economic crashes. And, you know, again, I've been around long enough to have seen these guys come and go over the decades. You know, Peter Schiff has maintained his position, you know, forever. Yeah. He hasn't quite been right yet, although, you know, at some point, sure, he'll probably be there.
He'll probably be right.
The point is that, you know, I do understand where he comes from, you know, and I think that, I don't want to say too much hype, but a little bit too much hype, I don't think is appropriate for the average investor looking at this the way they should. It's fun and the excitement is there. I mean, no question about it. This is a very interesting time. It's really exciting for us in the industry when we crack new levels. I think inflation adjusted, if I did the math right, I think gold's actual high was about $2,500 an ounce. That would probably go back to 1980. So we have nominal highs. These are the highest levels we've seen in gold price-wise. And I think we will continue to see this upward movement. Again, I don't know that a 50% retracement is in place, but a pullback when we've gone from 1,400 to over 2,000 without a break, it just seems historically that that's likely. And I think it would be very short term, might even last a week or less. But I think Peter Schiff did point out one thing I would agree with. There are people I talk to who, once we hit new levels, they say, okay, well, if it gets back to 1,500, call me and I'll buy. Well, you know, I have people tell me
probably
that when silver crossed 14, they said, if it gets back to 9, okay, well, they're still waiting. And now it's 27. So there is a downside to trying to play that outsmart the market game. I never have found anybody that smart who can outsmart the entire market and really come to a guess ahead of time of when there might be and how much of a pullback could occur. Again, I think it seems likely to me historically we would get some sort of pullback. No markets ever go straight up, and I don't think anybody should expect it to.
Mm-hmm.
But the people that are in this properly, again, are not worried about next week's price. They're thinking 5 years from now. So, you know, all kudos to Peter Schiff for sticking to his guns. You know, and again, now, $3,000 gold, is that reasonable? I'd say it has to be.
Sure,
now.
Doesn't look
I mean,
too far away.
We'll be talking about gold at $3,000 an ounce.
Fred.
But whether or not somebody comes into the market, you know, mm-hmm. for tomorrow's gain, I just don't think that's the way to go.
Fred, when I talk to friends about this, and they really understand what's going on with the money, and you know, kind of mention you and say you should maybe call Fred or do something else, many of the people are on kind of a tight budget, this thing, and they don't have a whole lot of money to play with, you know, a little bit here and there. Is there a way that those folks can get in somehow now, little by little, to have a hedge with some gold and silver in their possession?
Well, silver is still incredibly inexpensive. You know, even now at $27 an ounce, you know, half dollars are available for $13 and change per coin or so. This is something that people can accumulate in quantities of maybe 100 coins at a time or so and build a position over time. Most of the successful investors that we have worked with tended to accumulate over time.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever they had a little bit extra capital they could throw toward it, they'd build on their little stash pile and try to build themselves a position.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some affordable ways to get into the market. If you go to our website at uscoincapital.com,
mm-hmm.
and again, capital spelled like the building, so it's CAPITOL,
mm-hmm.
uscoincapital.com. We've actually put together a couple of packages. One of them is fairly affordable. It's under $1,000. And it's designed specifically to help a newer investor or somebody who doesn't have extensive amounts of money to at least be able to start and build themselves a little position. So there definitely are some affordable ways to get.
And those, we find those, I'm clicking on coins, gold coins, silver coins, copper coins. Where is that little package?
And so you'll see some packages that are pre-made.
Packages pre-made.
You should see, yeah, there are three packages put together. If you go back toward the top of the page and then sort of cursor yourself down, you'll come across the two bits, the Sawbuck and the C-Note.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Pre-made packages.
Oh, I see, yeah. Two bits, C-Note and Sawbuck. Oh, cool. All right.
Yeah. And anybody who's looked at the website in the past couple of months will notice that the prices of those things are changing, creeping up as we've had to adjust as the costs have continued to increase.
You have to, right?
But those are available, and the Buy Now tab actually is now functionable.
That's good.
So you can actually just go right to the website and just click on it and buy it right off the website if you don't want to talk to anybody.
These two bits look fun.
As you pointed out, we are very happy to talk with people.
These two bits look fun. This package is perfect for beginners. It's just right for exploring your potential. One Morgan Dollar MS65, and that's a kind of a really nice little Morgan Dollar. And then 50 circulated silver half dollars for $7.95. Put that in your under your underwear drawer, right? And watch it grow. Watch it grow.
Absolutely. So the little silver half dollars are just loose 1964 and earlier. For those unfamiliar with that, the U.S. government actually had, up through 1964, the regular change that we used in those days actually was made of silver. It's almost hard to envision that now. But as we talked about this quote-unquote shortage of modern coins, these were actually silver coins up to 1964. And they haven't made any since then, and not go back and make more of them. So the supply of those is fixed by time already. And people are accumulating them because, again, the value of the silver and the slight value that they have as a coin are both increasing as we get more and more capital pouring into the market. More paper being printed over the supplies that are fixed drives the prices higher. So we have these silver coins from before 1964. You can still actually have. And this is direct ownership. So in other words, the physical coins themselves are sent right to the customer. You have ownership of the actual product. It's not a paper investment. You don't have to rely on us for anything. We provide it directly to you. You put it away someplace and safe and just let it appreciate over a period of time. So there are affordable ways for people to get into the market for sure. And I would encourage people to do, again, a diversification of their portfolio. Mm-hmm. This shouldn't be the only thing you own, but you should have a little bit of this type of wealth as a part of your overall investment package.
Treasury just announced $112 billion, debt sale. They got put the bonds out today, baby. If you want to loan the government some money, they're looking for $112 billion today. No problem. Yeah, we can get that. Wow. They're going to do...
I guarantee that'll sell out.
Yeah, it'll sell out. They're going to do 30-year notes.
It'll sell out.
I'm sorry, 3-year notes, and then 10-year notes and 30-year bonds. And... not sure about the interest rates that they're going to pay on those guys, but I could probably click on it and kind of figure out. Not a lot, though, right, Freddie? I mean, there's just not a lot of...
Probably about 0.2% on the 10. You know, I guess the 30 might be maybe 0.5, 0.7 at most. Again, it is a negative yielding investment when the level of inflation is so far ahead of the interest that it pays. You are actually losing money. Now, we had talked about, I think maybe last show or the show before that, that in parts of the world, their central banks were offering negative yielding interest rates.
Yes, sir.
Actually not paying a positive rate, but actually a negative rate. So they would say to you, give me $100,000 today, I'll give you $98,000 in 5 years.
What fun.
And as insane as that sounds,
people
that
do.
Was attractive to people because, again, they saw it as a way of fixing a limited potential loss otherwise that they might see if they put the money into work at the various stock exchanges.
Or even at the bank. I guess people are beginning to be a little bit cautious of banks and possible bail-ins or whatever, you know. So I guess some people don't even feel good about the bank. So Might as well do it. Yeah. Wow.
I don't blame them. The losses that some of the companies have had to incorporate in the past quarter have been massive. I mean, the banks are having some trouble. There are a number of investment houses that have lost untold amounts of money. And there are defaults on loans. These are natural environmental effects of a slowing economy. So imagine now you're out of work. Well, how do you pay your mortgage? How do you pay off your credit card debts? Who's taking the brunt of the hit? Do you know AIG, remember AIG from the crisis in 2008, American Internet Group, they lost $9 billion in the last quarter.
$9 billion.
From lack of payments. $9 billion. So the effects of this slowing economy are really impacting a lot of places and a lot of different types of businesses. And again, this is really problematic in an economy that is already slowing down and struggling. So I think the Federal Reserve has basically decided that whatever the case may be in the future, the current goal would be make sure we don't have any more Lehman's, any more failures, any more disruptions in the economy. And the Federal Reserve has also been weaker on its financial requirements from the banks, because one of the other ways the Fed can kind of slow down how much money a bank lends is by forcing the bank's reserve requirements to go up.
And they've done that.
So the Fed is loosening the restrictions a little bit on the reserve requirements, also hoping that the banks will loan more money. But if you'll notice that occasionally the banks come up short, because every quarter they have to come up with a exact level that the Fed requires that they maintain. And this is why we had that repo problem months ago, because all of the banks were running into the overnight window to borrow the money to make good on their credit lines, to make sure that when the quarter ended, they could show the Federal Reserve they had the sufficient amount of reserves that the Fed requires. The day after that, they started money out again and went negative and figured they'll catch up. So there is a lot of interesting things happening that I see that will continue to require an awful lot of printing. And again, Congress is now debating, I don't know what you think, I think that Congress is going to approve another stimulus.
I think so too. It's just a matter of how much, right?
I know a lot of people are
debating. The Dems want, I think, $3 trillion, and now it's more. I read yesterday, 3.2, and the Republicans are at, I don't know, $1.5 trillion. So they'll probably come in at two somewhere, $2.5 or something. Where's all that money going?
It's going into the hands of the people if they're sending out checks, and what people have been doing with it is paying off a lot of credit card debts.
Oh, yeah.
So, which is fine, but again, where does the money come from? So we don't have a pool of money to draw from for these programs.
Nope.
So we're just piling on the
more debt. Yeah.
The Office of Management and Budget is now predicting $2 trillion deficits annually from here forward.
$2 trillion a year,
three
right?
Three times whatever.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
So we'll be a $30 trillion bonded debt in no time, right? I mean, that's...
No time at all, yeah. Yeah, and this has been my problem with the overall status is the rate at which things are accelerating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a steady increase in the money supply, you can adjust to that. We can deal with that. We can monetize that at a level that is manageable, but... You know, we're going parabolic here. You know, this is a curve that is now, like, really accelerating.
Parabolic.
And, you know, the levels at which we're getting to are just so large that, as even the chairman of the Federal Reserve has pointed out, that they don't even know if they have a mechanism to figure out how to unwind this stuff in the end. I think this is precarious times for the future value of the dollar.
And then if you do $30 trillion, just back of the envelope, at 2%, I mean, that's $600 billion a year in interest. If you know,
just an interest,
and just an interest, $600 billion that comes right out of our taxes.
Absolutely. So the requirement for the draw is going to increase. So what happens? How does the Fed manage that? They'll have to raise taxes, they'll have to print more money, or they cut services. And this is where the political problem comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Now you get the debate. What's the worst or best way to manage this? Should I cut your services more, or should I raise interest rates? Should I force you to make sure that your pensions are fully funded? You know, look at what they did to the Postal Service, for example.
Yeah, I saw
during the Clinton administration, they went to the Postal Service and said, okay, you're actually profitable. You know, the Postal Service was profitable in the 90s.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
They weren't losing money. Congress turned around and said, well, here's the thing. You have all these employees and you can't fund their pension over the next 20 years. We want you to segregate the money to guarantee the pension of all of your employees over the next decade.
Mm-hmm.
And once they forced the Postal Service to fund the pension account, they started bleeding money like crazy. Now they're losing billions of dollars a year.
Yeah.
Imagine if the U.S. government did the same thing to all the private corporations. If they said,
with their pensions?
No more of these games. Yeah, actually, or if the government itself had to fund the 170 different funds that it has, fully fund them, we would be bleeding three times as much money as we are.
That's
so
right.
Not only do we not have enough money to pay current bills, but...
You know, the Social Security Trust Fund, actually, obviously, Andy talked a lot about it. There's nothing in there but non-marketable securities, right? They took all that money, about $3 trillion. But you're saying, and Andy had talked about it, but not a great deal, there's all kinds of trust funds that they have been taking money out for years and just putting IOUs, right? All kinds of.
There's 170 different federal government trust funds that they've been robbing. The biggest one, of course, was Social Security, where at one point they literally had the money, the cash. They then had that converted to bonds. They then had that converted to IOUs from Robert Rubin, who was Treasury Secretary at the time, who said, I'm going to pull the U.S. government bonds from Social Security's trust fund and replace it with these little pieces of paper, IOUs. It was a promise that I will somehow make good on this debt in the future, although I have no idea how at this moment. That's the plan. And then use that capital from those bonds to finance the current government expenditures. And this is how Bill Clinton was able to turn around to the American public and say, we have a balanced budget. Well, the balanced budget came from basically robbing the general public's fund and utilizing that money in the current economic environment. And their argument was, when they said the pushback was, this is supposed to be a trust fund, the response was, well, the word trust doesn't mean the same thing in government lingo that it does in the general public's lingo. So by trust, we didn't exactly mean that the money was segregated not to be used for any other purpose. We just meant that we had an obligation to somehow make good on this in the future. And that's where they left it. And since then, of course, that Social Security fund has been bankrupt. And that means that every time we write Social Security checks, they have to create the money, since they don't actually have it.
They don't have it.
To make good on all those obligations. And as the aging of America continues, that draw becomes greater and greater.
I think it's about $200 billion a year now, isn't it? Somewhere in that range, they're short on that.
We crossed the line of there are more pulling out than contributing now.
Right. They got some pretty good job numbers. Before we go, we got some pretty good job numbers this morning. 167,000, I guess, in the month of June. Pretty good, right?
Sure.
I guess. So, President.
Yep. Nice to see people being able to get back to work and working. I think that's wonderful. Again, I really have a lot of empathy for those people that have been negatively affected by things like COVID. All those people in the restaurant industries and all the affected businesses, as you mentioned, a number of these like clothiers that have gone out of business, some of them have been around, 75, 100 years?
Yeah, Brooks Brothers.
Suddenly now finding themselves, they're done.
Brooks Brothers, Men's Warehouse, amazing.
Taylor, just one after another.
Poof.
Hard to imagine just a few months of bad revenues and they're done. They're just done. So. It's a really difficult economy for a lot of people, and it's going to be a problem. I think it's going to go on for a while, but I do believe that we come through this in the end, and people will get back to work. The only question I have is, you know, how we've addressed the problem, I believe, comes at a cost, and it's just something we're not going to be able to walk away from when this is over and say, okay, we're finished, back to normal. Well, we're going to be paying for this for a decade or more, at least.
And what you're saying before we go is, if they start to do the $2 trillion in the red every year, Fred, right? every $2 trillion every year, which is they're predicting the CBO.
Sure.
You would
deficit spending.
Somehow, would you have to raise taxes to do that, or would you just pile on more debt? I mean, I don't. Obviously, there's.
You'll have to raise taxes. You'll have to raise interest rates. You know, the problem has become that the amount of debt what we are now building has exceeded even the level of the gross domestic product of the entire country. Hmm. And, you know, we've never been in that kind of position before.
Doesn't
so
even make sense.
You know, I mean, we're taking every dollar the country earns together in everything we do, everything we manufacture, everything we create, add all that together, put it in a big pile and say, you know, what is that number? We're actually spending more than what we produce as a nation. And that is why I believe Jerome Powell referred to this as unsustainable. You can't continue to do that. You know, imagine if, you know, you owed money to a handful of friends and 30% of your income was paying your debt service. But then you kept piling on the debt until eventually you owed 110% of your income to debt service. So if you took 100% of the money you earned before you ever bought yourself food or did anything that you wanted to do, you know, you couldn't even pay your debt with 100% of your money. You were 10% left, you know. I mean, this is where the country is going. We are exceeding our ability to repay. And that leaves only a few options: raising taxes and printing an awful lot of money, both of which are not really conducive for the, you know, the health, well-being from a financial standpoint of the average American. So I will say that people should be prepared for an inevitable weaker dollar, and they would do themselves a big, big favor if they would accumulate a little bit of physical gold and silver coins as a counterbalance, so that at least if this process of printing continues, there will be some benefit for those people that are positioned properly.
Well said, Mr. Dashefsky. Good for you.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, we had a good time. Thanks for being here. I know you got to go and go back to work. Phones are ringing. Your number there is 800-878-2646, right?
It is.
Hours of operation, what, 8 to 5, 9?
Well, they're pretty long these days, but from a standpoint of where I'm at my desk, I'm going to say 10 to 5 Eastern Time, Monday through Friday.
Yeah, Monday through Friday. All right, kiddo. Thanks a lot for being here. We appreciate it. Stay in touch.
Thank you, let us know. It's always great to see you.
I know, it's great, man. Stuff works. See you later. Okay, Fred Dashefsky, Patrick Timpone, and it's OneRadioNetwork.com. And let's see if I can make this thing work and get off here. And there you go. Okay. Well, that was fun. Hope you had a good. Have now a better understanding of how the game is played, and that's all we can do is give a little bit of here and there, so you can kind of get your head around this. So when you hear the talking heads on TV, which we don't recommend, but if you do, at least you have a little bit of a knowledge about, you know, bonds, stocks, dollar, gold. But we'll be keeping an eye on gold. It's really zooming. $2,042 this morning, up 1%. Silver, check it out. Silver is about $27 now an ounce, and it's up 3%. So we're going to regroup here and talk to a fellow. And we're going to talk more about money, about geopolitics, about all kinds of fun things. His name is Michael Shedlock, and his website is thestreet.com. He calls himself Mish. So we're going to be talking to him. I'm going to I got some water. But I'll regroup, and then we will see you in just a few moments. So you stay right there, and we'll be back up on OneRadioNetwork.com and YouTube on video and also on the audio in just a couple of minutes.
We are listener supported. One Radio Network.